Good morning. Mind if I sit here?
No, not at all. Come on in. Have a seat.
Thanks. I'm Roman Krantz with Consolidated International.
Did you say Rosencrantz?
No. Roman Krantz. Some of my so-called friends called me Rosie when we were growing up.
Imagine that. What are the odds?
What do you mean?
Well, my name's Gilbert Stern, and you can probably guess my nickname.
Goldie?
Yep, that's it. Amazing. Rosie Krantz and Goldie Stern.
Roman.
Right, Roman. Sounds like our neighborhoods both had the same warped sense of humor. Where'd you grow up, anyhow?
Pittsburgh. You?
Same. North Hills?
No, South Hills. Well, oh. Must be a regional thing.
Could be. You know, I had a friend with a stuffed donkey named Hody.
Cute.
So, what do you do at Consolidated International?
I like to think of myself as Red Adair, troubleshooter extraordinaire.
Who's Red Adair?
He's that guy that went around putting out oil well fires.
Oh, that's right. I remember.
Well, that's me. Need to know something about corporate systems, process, data, pretty much anything. I'm the guy. I enjoy helping people, and I really like digging into the nuances of the company's data.
Sounds fun.
It is. How about you? I see on your badge you're with Omnivox.
Well, I was for more than 20 years.
Oh.
Yeah. I got the layoff letter last week. I'd signed up for the conference a couple of months ago, and the registration and travel expenses were already prepaid. So, here I am.
Yeah, I keep hearing that AI has taken all the corporate jobs.
Yep, seems to have gotten mine. One minute, great job. Next minute, poof.
Well, I'm sorry. What'd you do?
I was lead data architect.
We had some of those. But our department's policy was not to return their calls. We called them the red tape dispensers. Oh, I'm sorry. I shouldn't make light of that.
That's all right. We heard a lot of that. It wasn't totally undeserved, but I'll bet that you get more than a few questions that you thought the callers could have answered themselves if they had the information about the systems and the data available to them.
Sounds like you're speaking from experience, and it's true. Sometimes I do get the same couple of questions over and over, and over and over again. At one point, I tried to get rtfm@consolidated.com as my email address, but they wouldn't let me.
And I also bet that yours wasn't the only group that didn't answer emails from the data team. It's probably how the information didn't make it into TFM for them to R. But apparently data expertise wasn't a priority at Omnibox either, because I got the boot and was replaced by a college kid with a ChatGPT login.
So, you're here at the AI Bootstrap to meet the enemy.
Yeah, I suppose so. Mainly, I just wanted to learn about it. I'm not sure it really matters much now. But I don't have anything else on my calendar. I do know it promises the one thing that the big shots can't resist.
What's that? More revenue? Bigger bonuses? Stock options?
Nope. The driver of all executive decisions? Lower headcount.
Oh, so true. And I keep hearing about how generative AI was going to generate all these new and better jobs.
Me too. Companies are going all in on it, burning the ships before they even know it's going to work out.
The first annual AI Bootstrap, brought to you by Outplaced, will begin momentarily in the Magellan Ballroom.
We'd better get inside before the place fills up.
Here, let me grab my stuff. I'll walk with you. Who's the first speaker?
I think it's a conversation on this very topic.
Sounds like they're starting.
This is John Landley.
And Mark Cooper.
Welcome to the Rock Bottom Data Feed. To AI or not to AI? That is the...
No, that's not really the question. Not anymore. It's not whether, but how. We can either figure out how to make AI work for us, or we can end up at a workshop sponsored by Outplaced, like our friends Roman and Gilbert. Let's listen in. But first,
we'd like to take a moment in this episode to welcome our new supporter for our podcast, Dataversity, a provider of training, conferences, and services in the data field. Thank you so much for your support, Dataversity. For more information, look up dataversity.net. sat down and started to record this monologue, I was pretty uncertain what to say or where to start because it's about artificial intelligence. Well, I'm not sure what to say. Now, that's personal. There's certainly a lot of information about that out there. AI is good. It's the next big wave. AI is bad. It's going to take over our lives. The Matrix is here. Well, it's time for us to break this down and talk about it. So we're starting a series of that here. And we're starting with some folks that use it. And we're going to be talking to a lot of people that talk about it and also use it. At the end of the day, it seems there's two opinions. One, it's all doom and gloom, and we're approaching this all wrong. And two, there's some good there, but we have a lot to learn. I haven't heard a lot of people lately say, this is just wonderful, and it's a walk in the park. So with all of that, and some data, too, because at the end of the day, this is coming down to data again, and this is why our data podcast is going to talk about AI, because the latest data that's in, and as we look at how things are going, is it's not working, but we still want it. So we're going to pick it apart. We're going to peel the onion. I'm getting tired of hearing that. And of course, in rock bottom fashion, we're going to have a lot of fun doing it and talk to a lot of good friends. So, hang on. Oh, be nice to each other. It is my esteemed pleasure to welcome to the Rock Bottom Data Feed Kelly O'Neill and Greg Luce. Kelly is the founder and CEO of First San Francisco Partners, and Greg is their chief revenue officer, and they are going to talk about data and AI and things like that today. For the next however many minutes, we figure out what to do about this. Welcome to Rock Bottom, Kelly and Greg.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So let's just get into it, because this topic, you know, I mentioned AI in my second edition a few years ago, and it was like AI, and something might happen. And then all of a sudden, mushroom clouds, right? And things like that. So you're here because it came across my radar here recently that you guys are using AI in your practice. Okay, this is not the agent replacing the airline ticket person or anything like that. I mean, this is really cool. So start out, where did this come from? And tell us a little bit about what it is you're doing with AI.
Sure. Yeah. So you are right. AI has been around for a while. Mark, correct me if I'm wrong. You did your PhD dissertation in AI,
yes,
right?
I did
my homework too, right? So it has been around a really long time. And when, you know, ChatGPT first came out and it was this sort of like toy that people played with, we're trying to figure out really what is this going to mean to us as a consulting organization. And, you know, 3 years later, whatever, 4 years later, there is a tremendous amount of talk around the end of the consulting industry as we know it, the end of the legal industry as we know it, things like that. And from our perspective, we don't think that's true. We think it's a huge optimization opportunity, a huge productivity opportunity. And because we happen to consult in data, a huge consulting opportunity for us as well, right? So you can't have trusted AI without trusted data, blah, 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 right? So, I will tell you, we love that you invited us on the podcast, and we are definitely not doing everything right all the time. We are experimenting just like our clients are experimenting, and we're trying to figure out how do we use AI to make everything we do more productive. So we're not taking the humans out of the loop, and we're not removing their incredibly intuitive sense around their clients. We have set up a series of AI assistants internally. Some are working, some not so much. We're learning about how you have to train an AI assistant if you want it to produce something. And yes, you can actually control something and it doesn't respond well. I think we all have kids. I can't remember, Mark, if you, okay. Yeah. So that happens with kids too, right? If you control it too much, it doesn't respond well. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to figure out all of that internally. And we are continuing to learn and, you know, morph. I don't know, Greg, if you wanted to add something in terms of how you've seen it evolve internally.
Yeah, well, I think thank you. And the rationale for not just us using it was that the market started to shift in the data governance consulting that we offer. And it's amazing to see the enthusiasm and the rational exuberance, right? Federal Reserve Chairman once said that, Alan Greenspan. There's a lot of irrational exuberance out there right now, I'm going to be honest with you. And where it's starting to hit is that you cannot take technology and make a bad company great through AI agents, because the processes themselves need to be reimagined and the data that feeds it is nowhere near being ready. Where the excitement is starting to come from, though, is that ChatGPT has all of the data in the world and it can do wonderful things. And those models are fantastic. The enterprise large language model does not have it and it's not harmonized. So these steps, data governance is having its day. And that is the reason that we're using it internally, is because we're in all these discussions with customers who are saying data governance and AI governance, and where does it fit in? Is our data ready? So it's actually pretty exciting for me. I'm not a young man, but I'm an excited man about this because I see the potential. And you two know more than, especially you, John, written books on data governance. It is now mandatory. So that's why we're excited.
Well, yeah. Very appreciated. Sucking up to the one of the hosts is very welcome. Thank you, Chris.
I'm good.
Anyway, so our audience for this pod is, we started out wanting to just talk to CXOs. And we realized that the data people were really glomming onto that stuff. So we really have a bifurcated audience. So the next question I'd like you to answer at two directions, okay? Let's just pretend I heard all of that and I'm a CEO and I'm like, over the head, deer in the headlights. What? How does it work? What am I looking at here? Give me a vision. Give me a value proposition or something like that. And then do the same thing for a disenchanted, maybe scared data architect. Okay, something like that. How's that?
Sure. You might need to remind me of the second thing before I'm finished. So
preaching to the choir. Yeah, no problem.
So and what that means is that internally, we have started to identify those manual processes that we can leverage AI to make faster and to do for us in a repeatable way. For example, writing SOWs. That is something that a consulting organization does a lot of. And there have been tools on the marketplace like, I don't know, we've used a lot of them, PandaDoc and Conga and things like that, that are document generation systems. They're not intelligent around aggregating information. They provide placeholders that you then fill out in a very standardized, smooth way. They send it out to the client, et cetera. So it was a productivity enhancer, but it doesn't help you assemble in a way that reflects the voice and the context that you want it to have internally. And so we have a statement of work assistant. We have a marketing assistant that helps us to generate blog content and things like that. Are they perfect? Again, they're not. In fact, the marketing assistant is something that we tried to over control. And it is slow and it doesn't produce the output that we wanted it to because we gave it too many jobs all at once. So we're leaning into assistance at this moment to try and determine how to improve our processes and how to free up our consultants to do the hard work of actually consulting, not the back office processes that we have also asked them to do on top of their day job. And wow. We've learned in the process, we need to continue to drink our own champagne.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Yep. Did we do an internal data readiness assessment? Yeah, not so much. We need to do that more now. We did some. Yep. We think it's like this. And now we're like, yeah, it's not like that. We need to dig into it more.
Hmm.
Again,
they drink their own champagne, and I was told to eat my own dog food. It's so classy on the West Coast, Mark. Mark,
it's a much, much better neighborhood.
So classy. Yeah. Off to you, Mark.
Yep. How, you know, you've talked a lot about how you're using AI internally, you know, within the company to optimize processes there. Has your approach to working with clients changed as a result?
Oh, 1,000%. I'm going to let Greg give this perspective because as the chief revenue officer, he's the one that's talking to all of the clients, you know, more regularly. So Greg, how have you seen your pitch change?
So it's funny that that term comes up, right? Context. Context is actually the most important thing as you're going through these exercises, and how that's impacting what we're consulting is that there's a semantic layer. And we call it semantic intelligence that needs to take all of the know-how and tribal knowledge and lefts and rights and turns in an enterprise and somehow try to kind of programmatically get that ready to be machine readable wherever it can be, but a human in the loop where it's not. That's how it's really changing it. And it's really going to be a journey. I think it's probably almost a 10-year transformation process because the power of what it can do actually provides risk. And the risk lens is pretty important. So where they're going to start these processes is probably going to be way down that risk curve, right? You're not going to go and amplify something that the agent's responsible for killing your entire customer flow. So where that's happening today is that we've been able to create both kind of an AI governance and data governance, because what's happening when we're getting the investment connected to things like Agentforce, we're partnering with Salesforce, we're fixing some of the old data governance things, John, that you taught me a long time ago are still critical. And that is where I think the real productivity gains and the data governance offices are going to be critical components of almost any company that's trying to do anything.
Are you seeing clients using AI to generate their own metadata or to go through their program catalog, their application catalog, of looking at lineage through through the AI, through the generative AI? Have they got to that point yet?
Or? So if there was a metadata context engineering, you know, middleware product, it'd be the winner.
Yeah.
So yes, but they're doing it through the ecosystem to be able to cobble it together because all of the SaaS vendors are coming up with kind of metadata playing back into the model. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to have to orchestrate between them. So the questions that we're getting to answer your question specifically is how do multiple agent platforms then collaborate and orchestrate together mm-hmm. is where the call out is. And mm-hmm. those engineering solutions are going to have to play nicely through governance to how the business wants to operate, because some of these processes are going to be pretty big transformation the way they do it today.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I think we're approaching the holy grail of metadata, where you can throw it an application, you throw it a bunch of program code, you know, point it at your GitHub repository, and then it comes back and spits out this is what the data it's producing, this is what it should contain, this is what it means. Maybe it's 80% right, you know, but you know, that's a heck of a lot better than trying to document all this stuff from scratch.
Yes. We agree.
Wow. 100%. So, a quick sidebar, Greg confirmed with me, you talked about that, and this is for all the listeners, no matter which side of the fence you're on a pod, that there are a lot of people cobbling things together. And so, and I'm, you know, being of advanced years, I'm the oldest person on this call. That scares me. Anyway,
you're the most wise.
Yes.
That's so kind. So kind. They're sucking up to the host again. All right. So, this, I've seen this before, you know, we get something, case tools and then, BI tools and then the early runs at data warehouse management and stuff. there's the marketplace isn't ready, but they're saying they're ready. Just to warn our listeners, there's a lot of talk out there, but there's still a lot of holes. There's a lot of gaps. There's a lot of slideware, maybe. Guys, well, our pod, we do not hesitate to slam anyone who's just blowing smoke up someone's nether parts, okay? And we will do that. So, and that's happening because it's not there. Like you just said, you're out there in the field duking it out, and it's not quite there. Confirmed?
Oh, my gosh, so confirmed.
Okay.
It's actually quite scary, John, because this AI conversation is happening at the very, very top level by people that really don't know what they're talking about at all. And so they hire big expensive consultants to tell them what they do, to tell them what to do. And then those consultants, because they have a stake in the game for lots of reasons, including political reasons, and I'm talking capital P political reasons,
they
recommend the purchase of tools like Palantir. And they do not have any idea the implication to the organization of making that a directive and making that a statement that the organization is going to be accountable to make successful.
Yeah.
So I know this isn't a political podcast, but that's happening. And it's really, really scary. And the poor people in the organization are like wheels, tires, and frames. What is happening here? How am I going to make this work? It's really scary, actually.
And we always say here, data is anthropology.
Yeah.
And anthropology is people. Therefore, data is people. And wherever you have people, you're going to have politics.
And to the pod listener, it's a reoccurring theme, and we are not going to relent on it. You know, you're watching something happening with human life right now that hasn't happened since the late 18th century and the 19th century. Those are the kinds of things that are happening where we're going to wake up one day and say, good heavens, all of our societies, structures, and infrastructure and a whole bunch of stuff just isn't up to a task. And we don't even know what that is going to be like.
And in fact, maybe it's early, but have you guys been called in to deal with the aftermath of a data-related AI catastrophe?
I don't think we've been in one where it's been a catastrophe yet. It's catastrophic to watch the process unfold at a particular client right now where the expectations are so up in the stratosphere and their delivery capabilities are like 10 floors down, right? So where that's going to manifest itself is that you're going to have disillusionment. What do they call the trough of disillusionment? They're right in the trough of disillusionment because I'm going to give you an example. Go through the process. We're going to reimagine this customer service process along this line. Here's how it's going to work. Here's the flows and all that stuff. I need a data product, which is basically a contract, right? That the agent can work in. Data Government Hub, you got the data product? No, we haven't gone through the route of how to get through where the data comes from because it's so complex and all the tribal knowledge needs to get into that data product. So you can't just pick a tool and say, hey, roll out data products because you need the company, those humans in that loop who understand it to be able to contribute. So all the pressure is on the wrong people.
Yep. So they're trying to skip that part and move on to
the agent flow fails.
Yeah. Yeah. That's there is a theme that's through the whole industry, and I've been working, and Mark and I've had Tom Redman on, and we've had Randy Bean on last year, and with the surveys and all of that, and the gaps between the decision makers and how they're making their decisions and the results and what's happening at the bottom are concerning in a lot of ways. Yeah. So that kind of gets us back to this holy grail thing that Mark mentioned, and that is doing something that people are doing now. And Mark and I have had an ongoing debate about this between ourselves. Some sources say AI will slash jobs. And that's where I come from, which is as soon as a CEO or an American board, all Harvard educated, Yale educated, they ain't going to raise their stock price and buy stuff back and liquidate all this. They're doing all those common things and they smell, fewer headcount. I'm on it. Boom, boom, boom. And I'm like, Are you seeing that AI is being used to slash jobs, or are you maybe seeing something a little more optimistic, like my friend Mark here, who's a bit Pollyannish, but we'll just be nice to him, that is just going to change things and maybe not as many people are going to happen? So what are your I mean, you yourself are talking about maybe fewer consultants, or better yet, because I used to do consulting, in full disclosure, podcast listeners, Kelly and I used to work for First San Francisco Partners about 1,000 years ago. So
best consultant we ever had.
That's right.
thank you. Anyway, I can see the back office stuff, like statements of work. Oh, that's miserable work. We all hate that. You know, Greg calls up and says, hey, let's do a proposal. And I'm like, let's get a root canal. That's the same thing
exactly.
We're thinking. Okay. I love that because overhead, driving down overhead is perfectly awesome stuff to do. Then you don't have consultants. You have them out there being billable. They're sitting at their cubicle in the office cranking out a statement of work or something. That's awesome stuff. And that's okay because you're redeploying assets to a higher margin thing. But what about just slashing bodies? Are you seeing that or anything like that?
I'm probably in Camp Mark, where I don't think it's going to be a bloodbath. Okay. And I think that there's a couple of things that are going to evolve. I'm going to use another client as an example. We are working with one of those types of firms that are at risk of being, you know, completely disintermediated. They do accounting, they do, you know, some wealth advisory services and stuff like that. And they are what I would say, like, not bleeding edge, but they're advanced. They have a very aggressive plan around both creating agents to help with processes and agents that sit alongside those process agents to help that person in terms of their learning and their training. And the entire goal to make these processes more standardized, more efficient, more effective is so that they could A, serve more clients, and B, hire people faster and get them more effective faster. So they're looking at this as an opportunity to say, hey, where it used to be really difficult to hire 500 people, 1,000 people, and not have a 50% attrition rate because we realized that, you know, this person doesn't learn fast enough and this person, we thought they could do this thing. Well, it's standardizing that so much that they're actually able to grow and be more effective. So that's where I see a huge opportunity. And then the other thing where there's a lot of talk about, you know, we're seeing it, in fact, some of our kids or our friends' kids or our kids' friends, they're in this stage looking for jobs out of college. They're being told that AI is going to replace all the financial analysts, all of the, you know, analysts that are in these big banks, that are in these, you know, investment banking companies, et cetera, et cetera. And while, yes, there is a component of the AI will be able to do the analysis for you, those organizations are not going to have AI do all of their junior jobs, because guess what? Junior people become medium people, become senior people, et cetera. And if they're not trained on how to spot the flaws in the AI output, they're not going to be the rainmakers. They're not going to be the deal makers. And so I think that there's, yes, this desire of, you know, increasing productivity and that sort of thing, but it's in service of other things than slashing headcount.
Yeah. And I second you and support that wholeheartedly. And where I'm starting to see the flow from customers, literacy. Literacy has become a big thing around this, because what the organizations are looking for is how to amplify. It's not get rid of people. Produce more revenue on the same number of people is the first goal. Okay. We're doing it here. I'm going to give you an example of exactly how it works. I don't need to hire a 15-year expert in partner management, because I got some youth with ChatGPT and some other tools who become real smart, right? And with some guidance and support, I can produce more with them than going out and overpaying for somebody who's going to be a risk anyway. The second thing I think you're going to see is, just think about it like this. Model T, 1913. Fantastic. First mass-produced car. Horrible to everybody. What was the problem? No roads. We got to build the roads. And that's what we're doing, because you know what? We're going to be able to link things together and connect. There's so many things to be done. I think you take these bright, energetic, excited folks. If there's anybody who's got kids on this podcast that's listening, be excited. But have them be curious and lean all the way in to work with somebody who's got a bunch of experience but doesn't want to know AI. And together, you can actually change the world in that company. That's what I see happening.
I really like the road analogy. Because Henry Ford, in essence, had to almost create a market,
you know,
because he was so successful in mass production, way more than he thought he was going to be. He realized that there is no market here. And, you know, is there, let's you know, brainstorm for a little bit, Mark, you know, weigh in here too. What are some of the new roads that we might see? So rather than jobs going away, rather than jobs, existing jobs being enhanced, are there new roads out there? Are there new jobs that we don't even comprehend? I mean, business analyst was a Band-Aid position in the late 90s, and now you can get a degree in a position that was not supposed to be permanent. So, is there something new out there? Who wants to weigh in first? You know, raise a hand or something. Well, Kelly, go first. You're at the top of my Brady Bunch.
I don't know of. I would need to think about it more in terms of a absolutely new role. I think that people with less experience can step into roles more quickly.
I'll share something that I think that is really going to be exciting. I don't know that you have a specialty, right, in some specific thing like coding, for instance, because those things can be easily transferred to the computer. What's not easily transferred is the dynamic connection about how this company's business plan serves customers and how we together could work. And I think that's where this is going to be, this facilitation where you've got young and you've got experience really blending the company's capabilities are going to be a lot more transparent, because the gaps will be filled that used to be difficult and where the analyst was looking. And what we can do is produce more and connect farther with the customer and really better understand what they're looking for and drive it back into the innovation of what the company is going to deliver.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I look at it from a little bit different perspective. Tomorrow, about this time, be finishing up my first lecture class doing adjunct professoring with first year, or at least introductory, computer science kids.
Congrats.
And so the question I've been wrestling with is how do you not keep them away from this new technology? Because I think that the reflexive first thing that everybody did, especially in education, was say, no, you can't use it verboten, you know, block the websites, don't, you know, give everybody a zero if you found out that they did it on ChatGPT. And instead try to get them to look at it a different way and use it as an enabler, as a reference, as a tutor. You know, would you go to your tutor and ask, you know, write this program for me? No, that would be an inappropriate question to ask a tutor, and a tutor would say, no, I'm not going to answer it. The problem is ChatGPT was going to very happily go and give you the answer, give you the program that you're asking for. And to your point, Greg, about when you know, you're able to orchestrate a lot more with junior folks working in conjunction with the technology, the question that then comes to mind for me is how do you take those junior people and get them the, you know, the background and the experience and frankly the intuition that you've earned over many, many years of doing it the hard way, and you know, how does that get passed down to the next generation that might just be using the tools and leaning into your intuition? How do they get the intuition?
Yeah, well, I'm going to tell you, let me finish this quick point, and Kelly, you can go. The piece that we're doing, because that's exactly what I thought of, I sit with them and we're going through it together. And it's been really, I learn from them and they learn from me. This layering where the manager at the top waits to get through the filter process and find out what happened, that's not going to work. I think we sit together and we work on it in the collaborative way.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think, Mark, one thing that you highlighted is maybe there is this role called a corporate anthropologist or something like that. Ooh. And maybe there's more people in the organization just terrible?
No, it was awesome. John's a happy guy now. Thank you.
So maybe this is actually an expansion of roles that used to be, you know, training roles or, you know, things like that, where they were training on processes and now they're actually having to translate the intuition and how do you judge and in our corporate philosophy, what is an appropriate judgment versus somebody else's organization, back to things like context. How do we give these people context? And so therefore it becomes more appropriate for some of those softer skills that are harder to teach. And maybe there's leaning into that. Yep. That's my final answer.
And in a lot of respects that we're expecting to be able to teach today the way that we taught 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that's going to work. And it's a new way of interacting.
Cool.
We'll return to our conversation with Kelly and Greg in a moment, but first...
Rock Bottom Data Feed and Counter-Threaded Productions is proud to be supported in part by Dataversity. The Dataversity mission is to provide the single best source of education for anyone working with data in their professional life. If you say or hear the term AI, data-driven, or anything else data, you need Dataversity. Later in the podcast, there will be a special offer for a discount on Dataversity offerings. Hey, so let's just end up some questions here with some prescriptive stuff. Your elevator speech time. You're given advice, short elevator ride, Kelly, with a data architect who's dazed and confused. You have a short elevator ride with a CEO. Okay, both of them are, what type of advice about AI comes to mind to tell that person? And each of you take, Kelly, go first, and then Greg, both people.
Yeah. So my elevator pitch to the data architect is your skills are incredibly valuable. And you need to really sell yourself and your peers to make sure that your organization takes advantage of the knowledge that you have around your ability to structure data, so that when you are AI ready, that AI will be able to take advantage of all of the smarts that you have around the way that you have modeled, the way that you have created taxonomies and ontologies. It's an incredibly valuable skill set. And for the CEO, yes, it's a CEO level issue. And where are you going to get business value from these experiments? And to think about the experiments as experiments, however, ultimately they will need to prove value. So, you know, CEO, First San Francisco would love to be able to ensure that when you go through these experiments, that the inputs that you're using in these experiments, also called data, are going to serve you in the most optimal way. And that's a critical success factor to making sure that AI has actual business value.
Awesome. Greg.
So for the data architect, I'll share with this with you. It's a very critical function, but it's not a standalone function. Collaborating together in purpose towards what the company is trying to achieve with a technology and a revolution toward doing business that we've never seen before requires collaboration. It requires an understanding, and you sharing what you do and them sharing what they're trying to do will land on the right spot. And you've got a very big role in helping your company get there. And to the CEO, this is a revolutionary technology for sure, but it's a commodity. Until you take your entire enterprise and approach how it would then serve your competitive advantage, you cannot change a business process that's going to hurt it. You need to change it towards serving it in a better way. The technology will not do it alone, but everybody collaborating in each group and each function you have, that's where you'll end up being best served. And that's where the priorities for how you use it will come out.
Very, very good. This has been kind of one of the coolest 30 minutes, give or take, that we've had on the pod here. And I really, really want to thank Greg and Kelly. or Kelly and Greg. I'm sorry, she's more important. Kelly goes first. Yes, Kelly and
that's
Greg.
Correct.
That is and, not true. That is so correct. Not true.
And oh my gosh. But First San Francisco Partners, innovative, a new model for consulting, and I have been begging for a new consulting model for years and trying to find it, and being successful. And I think some of the bigger folks in the consulting space need to be very careful because you guys are out there. Okay, before you go, everyone answers two questions on the pod, all right?
Sure.
First question, which person, dead or alive, has been the most influential person to you in your data-related career?
Can I have two people?
Sure.
So as I was first starting for San Francisco Partners, I had never been a consultant. So this idea of starting a consulting company was incredibly naive. There's a woman named Nancy Ralston who sat with me and pulled my ideas out into a structure that I could translate into a value prop for a business. And I couldn't have done that by myself. And that assistance is so valuable in being able to start something that never existed before. And I know I'm kind of sucking up to the host, but John, you were incredibly influential. Oh. You were so influential with the way that I thought about the business, the way I thought about what does First San Francisco want to be as a company, and then also with just getting the work done. And we still, like any of our clients, will recognize some of the influence that you had on the company. First of all, the whole idea of line of sight between business goal and expectation down to the nitty-gritty data. Mm-hmm. You have to have that line of sight. And that importance of business purpose first is inherent to our organization. And I will also give credit to Pam Thomas. And I know that I only said one person. I'm always an overachiever. Pam Thomas helped us recognize the people impact that all of our work has, both internally and externally. And so that idea around true organizational change management, I definitely attribute to her.
Wow. I'd call her in, but she's out in the garden.
Yeah.
Second question, real short answer, Kelly. If you were all of a sudden imbued with the powers of Harry Potter and could twink a magic wand and change one thing and one thing only in this industry, what would it be?
In this industry.
Yeah, the data stuff. I mean, I'd like to, you know, world peace and no hunger and stuff like that, but yeah, we have to narrow it down to the industry here.
Yeah. If I could change one thing, I would change the way that people talk about data's importance in an organization. I think this group here is very unique. I don't think it exists everywhere. And it drives me nuts that people don't see value in data and data work. I would change that with a wave of my wand.
Awesome. Awesome. Greg, your turn. Person who's influenced you the most.
I'll second the notion on you, John. You're
a great
governance guy for sure.
Oh, stop.
You know, back, and I go way back because I was at the first MDM company that wasn't IBM. There's only three of us. Bill Inman. There's a name.
Good old Bill.
I could tell. I would say Ralph Kimball too, but Bill. Yeah. We had to go through the process to learn the straight father of the data warehouse, right? Mm-hmm. And that was just back in the day. Green screens were running a lot of customer information and that. And I literally spent 30 straight days kind of going through and dissecting and understanding and learning and all that. And that, still to this day, I can tell you that was the influence on that.
Wow. Very, very cool. So what could you do to change the industry? What if you got your one magic spell?
I would accelerate the pain by which the technology companies feel when they can't make the systems work without clean data and governance. That's what I would do. I would accelerate it at a million miles an hour, because as soon as they get through that and the companies recognize where the value gets generated, they'll invest in the right way.
I think that's our winner of the best magic wand question for the last three series. That's a really, really good one. Okay, guys, this is really fun. Good.
Doing
session.
Good.
Good.
This is like we're in goosebump territory. I'm just telling you now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love it.
This could be great.
I'll comment. Yeah. You two are very good at it. Okay.
Wow. Appreciate
it's
that.
A natural thing. The flow between you is really good. Your pace, mm-hmm. the level of questions, like.
Yeah.
Well, thank you both very much for the time and the insights. And we'll have you back in just a few minutes for our famous game show. And thanks to our sponsor, returning for our third series, Hubris Data Pros. You can propel your AI efforts with high quality data or with Hubris. Hubris Data Pros. Welcome to Dispatches from Rock Bottom, dredging up practical information, advice, and food for thought. AI technology is moving fast from generative AI, AI agents, and now agentic AI. Soon, the Gartner hype cycle for AI won't be published annually or even biannually, but continuously like a stock ticker, something like...
And today in AI, Model Ops was down 4 hype points, sliding deeper into disillusionment while most LLMs held steady.
Seems we're also working full-time on creating new job descriptions. It wasn't that long ago that data scientist was the hot new job. Now that we've just about got prompt engineer approved, we need agentic AI architects. HR is going to stop taking our calls. Since we're going to be talking a lot about this stuff in this series, and probably beyond that, let's say a quick hello to each. By now, most of us are familiar with generative AI. You ask a question, get an answer. I know it's more than that, but that's how most people use it. Like a Google search, but more verbose and with more context. AI agents perceive their environment, process information, and take actions to complete a specific task. It's the take actions part that's the main differentiator. Think of them as read-write, where generative AI is read-only. And finally, agentic AI. And that's where things get a little fuzzy. You see, the definition you choose depends upon whether you want to be seen as actually implementing it or speaking aspirationally about its possibilities. The more practical definition roughly amounts to the orchestration of multiple AI agents to accomplish more complex tasks. And that makes sense, and it's a logical next step. Leading-edge companies are already successfully deploying AI agents, and so what's next? Get them working together. The more aspirational definition is that these systems autonomously pursue goals by planning, taking actions, and adapting based on feedback. They're able to manage multi-step tasks, use tools, and act over time with minimal human input, kind of like a project manager or assistant. I've heard lectures and read articles defining agentic AI in both ways, but you know, it won't be long before there's another new next big thing. Anyone for autonomous generative agentic AI agent bots? And then there's the data. There's a lot more to talk about. That's what I think. We'd love to hear your stories if you're willing to share. Write us at rockbottom@counterthreadedproductions.com.
Welcome back to the pod for a moment or two, Kelly and Greg. We are now going to play the world famous game show, the Audio Rorschach Test, where we play some music and we get the first impression from our guest on the pod. Importantly, though, it is in the context of the data industry. We don't want to hear about any, you know, other issues you might have. All right, sorry. All right, anyway, so Kelly, are you ready?
Sure, let's do it.
Okay, here we go. What are you thinking?
So to me, that's like very groovy, jivey. Everybody is working really well together. They, all of these different perspectives of data, they're collaborating well together and they're getting bleep done. So they're, that is what it sounds. Everybody's working, they're jamming, they're jiving. That's exactly what I hear.
Awesome, awesome, awesome.
Yep.
Okay. Greg, are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. I'm going to call up Greg. Pick a number here between 1 and 7 trillion.
5.
Okay. That's happens to be exactly what I have here. And
it makes the counting easier.
Yeah, it does. Hang on here a second. Okay, sir, what are you thinking?
Oh, once we roll out my algorithm, governance will be done and I'll get my bonus.
You still waiting for that bonus? Oh my gosh. We'll have to talk about that later, Mark. It's been forever. All right.
I love that.
Okay.
That's thank awesome.
You. Thank you again, guys. It's awesome to talk to you again.
And thanks for including us.
And we hope maybe we're going to have you back next year because this thing's exploding and it's going to be a laugh a minute, right?
Be pleased to.
All right. Thanks so much. Moving.
Thanks so much.
That was awesome.
Bye.
And thanks again to our sponsor, Hubris Data Pros, reminding you that any resemblance to actual events, persons, or businesses, living or dead, is purely coincidental. AI has found a foothold in data consulting. First San Francisco Partners provides a great example of how AI can be introduced into an organization. Start with the business problem, experiment, and if it works, keep going with it. If it doesn't, jettison it and try something different. But keep at it and start now. It's not going away. And be sure to visit dataversity.net and use discount code ROCK15 to get 15% off your first purchase. Until next time, this has been John Ladley and Mark Cooper for the Rock Bottom Data Feed. Thanks for listening, and remember, when you're here, you've reached rock bottom. You can find more information about the topics covered in this episode, more fuss about AI, at our website, rockbottomdatafeed.com. The Rock Bottom Data Feed is a counter-threaded production, copyright 2025, all rights reserved.